We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for all of you folks. I appreciate you tuning in. We have a guest today, a frequent guest, a friend of the pod, someone that should be your co-host, if it not for corporate greed and stupid decisions. This guy's name is Kyle Posey, and he runs NinersNation.com. Kyle, how are you?
I am great, man. Long time no talk, right? How's life?
It's the same, man. It's the same. I feel like you and I have that relationship where like it might be a couple weeks or a month or whatever, but shit's like exactly the same every time we talk. And like we have similar lives too. I know that you have. Oh, you know what? Hold on. Have I told you I'm having a kid?
Did I know that?
I don't know if you knew that.
I don't think so, man. Well, damn, congrats.
Because what I was about to say was the big difference in our lives is you have a kid. I don't have a kid. You have a daughter. Right? Nope. That's your only kid, right? Your daughter.
I got an 11-year-old. Sure do.
Yeah. How's she doing, man? Because she's like a stud. She does like sports stuff, so, right?
Yeah, she is. She does a travel cheer team that takes up like all of her life. She's at the age now where she's like, fuck my parents. I'm going to hang out with my parents. So,
right.
No, it's cool.
So yeah, I'm having a baby boy in December.
Love that. We got a name?
Robert Newton Lauder the 6th.
There's no way you just said that.
Did you know I was the 5th?
How creative. I didn't know, but.
Oh, it's not creative. Yeah.
So you don't, you don't really have a choice.
No, I mean, I had that talk with my dad. He's the 4th. I'm the 5th. And, you know, obviously, if you were going to end it, the 5th would be a reasonable place. A reasonable right. place.
Because well, we ain't stopping, baby.
Right. I almost feel like, okay, if I take one more step forward, we have to keep going all the way to 10. Oh. Because honestly, though, how badass would it be if your name was Robert Lauder X? You know, like,
no, that's like the only, that's the end game, pretty much.
Right. Right. That is that is the end game, bro. So I talked with him and we decided like, yeah, sure, let's keep going with it. Katie was obviously okay with it. Otherwise, I wouldn't have done with it. I wasn't going to like force it on her. Like, I'm not going to be like, hey, this is happening. So
this is tradition.
She was cool with it. Yeah. But anyways, how's the rest of your life, bro? I got to preface this with saying KP and I briefly talked about this before I hit record and the story quickly got so ridiculous that I was like, okay, stop talking. We have to hit record so we can talk about this pod. So KP, we're both football coaches, different age levels, both football coaches. How is your football coaching experience going this year?
Well, we started the season ranked in the state. We are no longer ranked in the state. We have lost more games than we've won. We have also lost 2 quarterbacks. We have a head coach getting sued. And I mean, I could go like 14 different directions. It is insane, honestly. It's every day. Every day is nothing. Or sorry, every day is something new. Like, it's one of those soap opera types where you don't know what's going to happen until you get to school. And then you're like, oh, of course. Like, why didn't I think of that? The writers are doing their thing. There's no doubt about it, though. But keeps me entertained, keeps me busy. How about yourself? Please tell me you're actually having a sane season.
It's sane for the most part. I've got a team, probably one of the freakiest athletes I've ever coached. That he's about my height. He's about 6 feet. One of the fastest athletes in the state at his, for his age level.
Love that.
So this is like a 6 foot tall man child that runs, and I'm not bullshitting you, probably runs somewhere between a 4.4 and a 4.5.
Goodness.
Just unbelievable. He's probably has 10 touchdowns at this point, I think. And we're about four games in. He should have more, but he's just one of those guys. And you see him all the time at this age level. That it's like, if you only knew what going all out would bring you, you know, right. Like
it's okay to be a tryhard.
Right. And he has his moments. He can score a 100-yard touchdown at any point. And it's not like because he's faster than everybody else, because that is the case, but he can run over any player we've ever faced, you know, like, He doesn't do that all the time. He takes a ton of plays off. And he's kind of worked himself into a point where they know he can score at any point, but I don't necessarily think the other teams are afraid of him, you know, right. Like when they should be absolutely terrified. Like Kendall Milton, Georgia's running back. I don't know if you know that name. I had to play against him in middle school, and that every time he touched the ball, it was a touchdown. And I don't even know if they played him on defense. They didn't even need to. And he's that kind of an athlete. I'm assuming he's going to play in college. I'm assuming he's going to get a scholarship. He has a chance to play on Sundays if he wants to. He's just not quite there yet mentally.
Those type of athletes don't go unnoticed. So just the fact that he's one of the fastest kids in the state, like somebody's going to find him.
Yeah, he apparently did track last year, and I don't know if he's going to do track again this year, but like one states or something, like he was up there. He was at a different school last year. So I'm not sure, but so we're 3-2, the two teams we lost to, we've played next. And both of those losses were like, if you guys would just pull your heads out of your asses for just a little bit and realize how good you are.
Yeah.
You can win these games. You know, middle schoolers get in their heads so quickly. Being down by one score is like the world is falling. Like, we just gave up a touchdown. It's all over. You know, they have a little bit of that in them. So
no, that's, but, it doesn't, I mean, stop in the high school level, man. We have a very talented team, like a very talented team. A bunch of guys. So we're very young. We have a bunch of sophomores that are starting, that are playing. And just as you said, one score, they start hyperventilating. They start acting like the game's over. Like, it's the first quarter. Yeah. What are we doing? That's just the youth, right? The immaturity.
It's like you want to see them do like that Cam Newton gif, you know, where somebody scores and they just go, okay. And then they put their helmet on, you know, like they just don't ever, a couple of them do that. Like, but you just wished all of them would, and you would like, man, you guys would be unstoppable. But I mean, it just comes with the middle school football, and apparently it comes with high school football too.
Yep, that's the game, man.
All right, so trying to think if there's anything else we didn't touch on. How are things at Niners Nation?
It's going well, man. I mean, they make it easy. Obviously, them winning by a lot helps every game. But at the same time, they're not stagnant. This isn't a stale team. There's always something to talk about, and whether it's quarterback, whether it's defense, whether it's skill players, acquiring players. A lot of topics to talk about, so it's cool, man.
Well, I mean, it's like I made the comment at the beginning of the season. I think it was right before week one or right after week one. And I was like, man, for the first time in a long time, we don't have to talk about 49ers quarterbacks. Like, I mean, we obviously will talk about them always, but it's like not in a weird way in the fact that the quarterback depth chart is very set. It's very defined. There's not a competition. It is what it is. And little did I know that, one, it's like a two-part thing. Brock Purdy would play out of his mind. And two, no one would give him any flowers. Like, and they're coming around, but it's been weird. But anyways, before we get into that, we're going to get into Brock Purdy. before it gets too far out of our mind, what are your, what were your what's your wrap up of what the 49ers did to the Dallas Cowboys?
I mean, it was a massacre, right? So Dallas came into the week when everybody's like, all right, finally, we're going to see the 49ers challenge. We're going to see a defense who is fast enough to contain them. We're going to see an offense who have the weapons, and we're going to see a quarterback who's just competent. So what are the 49ers really made of? This is supposed to be the litmus test. And I mean, they passed with flying colors, look across the board. It seemed like they scored. Well, they scored on their first three possessions of the second half. The only reason they didn't score four times in the first half was because of a fumble on the 2 yard line by one of their best players, if not their best player. So that
you know
just kind of tells you
about that fumble is like the 49ers, that fumble was as he was running over a Dallas defender. You know, it's like even their fumble wasn't hard. It was hard to be mad about. Keep going.
Right. And no, it's a good point. And that just kind of tells you like how much they dominated where like they fumbled at the 2 yard line and still won by a lot, like still won comfortably where the game never, even when it was 21-10, it never really felt like, oh, here comes Dallas. And sure enough, Dak threw up all over himself. It was a really impressive performance. And we talked about it a little bit off air where just like they have players at the positions where you need players at those positions. And that's, they're able to mask some of their other, you know, deficiencies like guard or for lack of, you know, sometimes slot corner. So just a really impressive performance. And I think it's pretty evident that this is the best team in the NFL. It's not particularly close.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of coming around to that. I guess when it comes to the Dallas game, I'm still kind of almost in a state of like denial, you know, like did that really happen? They were, that was just considered like obviously a postseason preview, you know, a Super Bowl caliber matchup, one of the most watched Sunday night football games of all time. You know,
and if like, you want to go like the curmudgeon route, like it's Mike McCarthy, right? It seemed like they ran like four or five plays the entire night. It's just not their offense lacks imagination, like big time. And on defense, it's Kyle Shanahan against Dan Quinn. Like he knows him. He coached with him. So he knows, he's seen his defense every day, and he was able to manipulate. He was able to run specific plays knowing that he could get over on Dan Quinn. So in that sense, they had a really good plan for Micah Parsons. And
that dude got hit almost every play.
Like by different people coming from different angles. It wasn't always the same. And that's what good coaches do. And it kind of showed how creative one organization is on both sides of the ball. And then the lack of creativity for Dallas. So like, that was my main takeaway. Just like, dang, Dallas is boring.
Well, the weird thing about, and I would think inherently, especially with the way the NFL is built, I think it's always easier for an offense to have the upper hand on a defense. I mean, that's kind of inherently built into the game of football. But for Dan Quinn to have coached with Kyle Shanahan, and you know, it works both ways. Kyle Shanahan knows what Dan Quinn's doing, but you would think that Dan Quinn had some sort of inkling as to what Kyle Shanahan was doing. And it's not like the Dallas defense is devoid of talent. They are,
you could make an elite.
Right. You could make an argument that the Dallas team, not as much talent as the 49ers offense has, but they've got their skilled players as well. But to see Kyle Shanahan just, and I don't want to give him all the credit. Obviously the players are out there making plays and executing to a degree that you don't really get to see often in football, but for him to just mop the floor with somebody who he knew well and knew him well, like, you know, it was just not quite what my eyes were expecting to see. You know, I like as the game went on and on, I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, you look at the 49ers possessions. It's like touchdown, couple of punts, a fumble that was on the 1 yard line, two more touchdowns, a punt, three touchdowns in a row. And by that time, you know, the starters aren't in the game anymore. And it's like that also was kind of an eye opener. You had starting star caliber players being like, man, I was taking my pads off in the third quarter.
Right.
You know, you're like, how often does that happen in the NFL?
Oh man, not often.
Not even in the NFL against a good team.
Yeah. That's what I was about to say. Like, especially against like these two quote unquote Super Bowl contenders, this was supposed to be 27-23. This was supposed to be 24-21. Not what we saw, like, at all.
Yeah, I felt this was going to be like it was going to feel like the 49ers playing the Seahawks, like, in 2013, you know, like,
yeah,
one of those matchups where it was going toe to toe, Colin Kaepernick, Russell Wilson, Anquan Boldin, like, you know, like Earl Thomas, Richard Sherman, like all of these players that despised each other, that had a lot of recent history with each other, and they were just going to go blow for blow. And, you know, it almost came down to whoever was making the last play, but it was not that game. And I don't know. Is there anything from that game that just, like, surprised you? You know, like, any one thing that just sticks out in your head as, like, just something you weren't expecting?
I didn't think that they would be able to score that much. Like, just I guess a better way to put it is I didn't think they would be able to score that easily. It was like there was, like, little resistance, man. And even after saying the familiarity with Shanahan and Quinn, like, Dallas has a lot of good players on defense. And their front is athletic and fast enough to make the 49ers offensive line look silly. But again, their play caller protected them from a lot. And when your quarterback plays on time and when you have the skill players that they do, that's what it looks like. So that was surprising to see the 49ers be able to generate as many big plays as they did. Just like, wow, man. Almost every time Purdy dropped back, it seemed like, oh, big play, big play. First down. Touchdown.
Right. The big series that I talked about, that I think everybody's talking about at this point, was when he made that unreal throw to Brandon Ayuk that went for like 40-something, and then it got called back to a penalty. So the response, making a 40-something yard throw to Debo on – third and long, and in what the defense would consider an obvious passing down. And then a couple plays later, he makes that throw over the middle to Kittle that he threw like well before Kittle had even gotten to that spot. I mean, that's the thing that JT O'Sullivan keeps talking about of the QB school, is like the anticipation he's throwing with is not normal. It's right. You know, he's A plus.
If you just pause it, when his hand comes off the ball, and you look at where the receiver is, like, he's just dropping his hips to make a cut. He's not even into his route yet, like, into the top of his route yet. So, like, that's never going to show up in any metric you look at. So, of course, no. He's not going to get the credit he's supposed to just because of just that anticipation right there. Or, I mean, not even throwing the ball down the field, but throwing the ball in front of the receiver so he has a chance to run after the catch. Like, those things matter, man.
Right, and it's even that that incompletion. I don't know if you watched JT O'Sullivan's video, but he talked about that incompletion to Ayuk where he was kind of running like this deep post stop almost, you know, like.
And, oh, yeah, but I know what you're talking about. It was early in the game, right?
Yeah, and he threw it behind him on the television angle. It almost looked like it got picked, but didn't really almost get picked. It was – and O'Sullivan was talking about that, and he's like, look, like, I get this is an incompletion, and he missed him, but look at when he's throwing the ball.
Yeah, like, process.
It was like almost like it was right around the same time as Ayuk's like first break, and he wasn't even close to stopping yet, and he just kind of missed the spot, you know, where he was going to stop. But the timing in which he was attempting to make that throw was just silly, and he's doing that really consistently, which is the weird thing. Like,
and focusing on those parts, so focusing on the one or two misses that he has a game, one, two, or three misses that he has a game, which every quarterback does this, as opposed to him throwing the ball 20 yards down the field on third and two. Him throwing the ball, like that, the one you just said that was called back to Ayuk, in my opinion, best throw that I've seen him make. Like, so he's pushing the ball down the field and playing confidently.
In like a phone booth too.
Right. Like, that was good coverage. Like, the dude was right there. And he put the ball only where Ayuk could get it. And Ayuk didn't break stride, which is like even more impressive. So the fact that he's willing to pull the trigger in situations like that, and we see over and over again where the ball is coming out on time, which not only helps the wide receiver make the play after the catch, but it's avoiding, like we're talking about, the guys up front. Like, they don't have to block for as long. And even if they do get beat, it's hidden because the quarterback's getting rid of the ball quickly. This was supposed to be a giant step up in class for the 49ers offense, and you would just have no idea that that was the case.
Well, now, you know, we'll get into the Browns a little later, but it seems like the Cowboys are supposed to be the litmus test for Brock Purdy, for the 49ers offense, for the 49ers defense, and they beat them so bad that everybody was like, okay, maybe it's the Browns. Maybe the Browns are the – and in some ways they are, especially when, you know, with the other things surrounding that game that we'll get into, but it was just like they – I'm almost certain not everybody I right. What if they do the same thing with the Browns?
It's right. The Jaguars.
It, you know, and it's if we'll get into the Browns, but it's just the 49ers are entering into almost that, like, you know, 2019, 2018, like Chiefs territory.
Whenever, I thought you were going to say 2019 49ers. I was going to say, no, they're better than them.
No, yeah, no. I mean, like, the 1 or 2 years, when did the Chiefs win their first Super Bowl? Was it against the Niners? It was before though, right?
It was 2019. No, because they need Mahomes.
Yeah. So whatever year, like, which, I mean, I think, I'm assuming that it was that year. Whenever year when we started to look at the Chiefs like an unstoppable juggernaut, you know, that's really the only point I'm trying to make, is the 49ers are kind of entering into that territory. If they
can, they sustain this,
right? I think so, because, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but it this doesn't even look like the 49ers look like they're capable of more,
right? So it's like Dallas, like, they had a good game, but I don't think they peaked. You talk about the punts early on, like, Dallas was still moving the ball. They had a couple of broken plays where they moved the ball. So, like, this team can for sure get better, which is kind of scary to think about, right? I'm thinking of their schedule and thinking, like, where is that first slip up going to happen? And, like, is Joe Burrow going to be healthy enough with the Bengals, against the Bengals?
I've got the schedule right here. You got Browns obviously this week, and you got Vikings, Bengals
Jefferson, so that takes out
Bengals at Levi's. Then you got a road game against the Jaguars, who are playing a decent brand of football. Then you've got a home game against the Buccaneers, away against the Seahawks, away against the Eagles, home against the Seahawks, away against the Cardinals, home against the Ravens, away against the Commanders, and then you've got the Rams at home. So, I don't know. I mean, there's definitely some teams in there that can give the 49ers some trouble. If
right, and division games are wonky. Like, you never know how those Seattle games are going to go. I mean, the Rams played them tough. I know they're going to play the Rams in Levi's Stadium, but we did this, I feel like, in 2019, and nobody would have predicted the way that they played against the Falcons. And I know that they had some injuries, but they're going to get every team's best shot. Like,
yeah, that's what I said in the last pod. It's like,
for a lot of these teams that aren't going to make the playoffs, like playing the 49ers, that's their playoff.
Right. I don't know, man. I mean, I think that you could probably comfortably say the 49ers you've got the Eagles. I guess you could say that the Eagles are the man until you beat the man, you know, like, I think it's clear that the Eagles are not the same Eagles that
we saw last year.
Yeah, they're not. They could find it, though. They could get it together. But, you know, if you want to go that route, if you want to say that the 49ers can't be the man until they beat the guys that beat them last year, as much stock as you want to put in that matchup. But, obviously the talk right now is, you've got Brock Purdy MVP chatter. You've got Dan Orlovsky saying that I think he even already walked this back quite a bit.
Of course.
Saying that Mac Jones would be playing as well. I don't even want to say it out of my mouth. Would be playing as well as Brock Purdy. We'll just sum it up with this. How good do you think Brock Purdy's playing right now? Do you think he's the MVP front runner? What kind of cred are you giving him?
What have you seen from Mac Jones to make you think that he'll be capable in any offense is the real question. Like, where is that coming from? We got to, like, once they're in the NFL, the draft status is just wiped away. Like, that's how real life works. So there, I think because Jones was drafted in the first round and Purdy was drafted in the seventh round, there a lot of people are assuming that if Purdy played on whoever else, the Seahawks, then he would be just worlds different. And I'm not so sure because he has a specific style of play. And like, if he's like, think about it, he's elevating the 49ers offense. This 49ers offense, like, sure, they were efficient, but they were never potent. And that's the biggest difference. So like, who else, what else is different? Yeah. Like, McCaffrey's here. McCaffrey is a big time game changer, but I don't know that their passing game, like, their passing game is soared through the roof since he's been under center. This, it's never looked like this under Jimmy. So
it's never looked like this since 2017.
Right. So
it hasn't even looked like this. You go back to the Harbaugh time, like, even with Colin Kaepernick, before people had figured them out per se, like, it still wasn't like this.
They have essentially normalized them scoring on every drive. The fact that you had to mention punting against the Dallas Cowboys like two or three times in the first half, like, that's it. They punted. And then, of course, in the second half when the game was, like, convincing or is over, but we were not, this was not a thing before this. So why are we acting like it's a thing now? So I think that's the biggest takeaway, is just how we talk about, based on how we talk about the offense, should tell you how good Brock Purdy is, right? Because they were never scoring at this clip. They were never scoring. They were never able to generate as many big plays. And over the offseason, you know, I was thinking, like, all right, how much of this is McCaffrey? How much of this is defenses are going to find out who he is? And then they start playing games and it's like, oh, they're better. So I don't know. I just think it's pretty naive and pretty lazy to ignore what he's doing and how he's elevating the offense. So, like, that has to be an MVP candidate. Will he win it? I don't know. If they keep winning by this type of margin, probably, honestly. So, like, yeah, that would be my spiel for MVP. Like, he has a number. He's not dropping back to throw 50 times. But when he drops back, like, there's an impact. There's an undoubted impact. And again, like, they're scoring at an insane clip. So this hasn't happened before. So we have to give whoever is making the difference credit, and that's the quarterback.
Right. I mean, if you think about it, I don't think Jimmy Garoppolo had his moments, but on all of Kyle Shanahan's offense, whether it was him with his dad, whatever, like, I'm not going to include his dad, Kyle Shanahan's offense. People act like there's some long list of quarterbacks that have played really well in his offense.
Right. When,
I mean, you've got Matt Ryan, who had Julio his own Jones. MVP season. Huh?
Julio Jones.
Right.
Like, he had the best receiver in the NFL.
Yeah, and Julio in his prime, too. Like, yes. I named a route after Julio. You know, that little post out he did, like, better than anybody ever. And Matt Ryan. And then, like, you want to throw in RG3, like, during his rookie year, because that fizzled out pretty quick, you know, but his rookie year was pretty amazing. Was
sustainable.
Right. And then who do you have? Who else? Like, was he the offensive coordinator for the Texans?
He was, but they had Andre Johnson.
Yeah. And Matt, he made Matt Schaub look okay. And then we saw, like, it was like the next year that Matt Schaub had, like, an unbelievable amount of pick sixes, even one against the 49ers. That fell apart. So, you're like, okay, so you had Jimmy Garoppolo pretty well. You had Matt Ryan. You had 1 year of RG3. It's like, people act like Kyle Shanahan has just been producing great quarterbacks, like, at a huge rate. And Jimmy Garoppolo looked pretty good. But even during all that time, everybody always loved to talk about the Jimmy Garoppolo ceiling. That did exist. We can see that now. And so, like, why do people act like Kyle Shanahan's offense is just churning out good quarterbacks all the time to an extent to where those good quarterbacks are no longer special, when that just isn't happening? And
yeah, no, it's a fair question. And I think it's just because how good they are in general, like how easy he makes offense look because of how the quarterback makes it look. So I think we're such a simple species that that's the reason.
And it's like, but it's like, he's had more quarterbacks look shitty in his offense than good. So I think we can give Brock Purdy a little bit of credit for looking really good. Like, it's crazy. He has like just the right amount of like quickness, movement, pocket presence, a little bit of courage when it comes to throwing downfield, timing, anticipation. Like none of the stuff he brings to the table is really like what you would think is a high caliber quarterback, but you know, you put it all together and the traits that don't show up when somebody, you know, when you look at a player, like the ones between the ears, and all of a sudden shit's just working out despite everybody and their mom not knowing why, because obviously if this dude was the last pick of the draft, then it almost indicts everybody, even the 49ers. Like people like to think that the 49ers came out looking sweet. Like, no, they picked him with the last pick in the draft. Like they picked hella other players first. They didn't know it either. So
a lot of luck involved.
So I don't know, man. It's just, it's a little silly at this point. I mean, we'll talk about obviously another strong test. I'm not going to say the test that we need to see. I'm not going to call the Browns like this is where we find out about Purdy. I'm not going to say that. I feel like we already found out. But before we get into that, let's do some Prize Picks stuff. Y'all know we got to do the Prize Picks, but I'm going to switch it up. What I'm going to do, and I just thought of this while we were talking. I am going to I'm going to let KP make my picks, my Prize Picks.
Oh, nice. How many do we get?
I mean, we could, so there's only 49ers players that are on here.
Ah, true.
But, and I also have to pick one from another team. So, and literally, I think, let me go Browns. The only one here for the Browns is Amari Cooper at 38 receiving yards. And for every one of them, I've kept them 49ers or the team they're playing. So we know we got to pick Amari Cooper. PrizePicks has him listed at 38.5 receiving yards. Do you think you'll have more or less?
Okay, so more, just because, just looking at his box scores. So when they played with a backup against the Ravens in week 4, he had 6 targets, 1 reception, 16 yards.
Yes, he did.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say, like, that's not going to happen again. Before that, and I know it's with Deshaun, he had 116. He had 90. So I'm going to middle that.
He will be playing against – or he will be – P.J. Walker is going to be the quarterback, right?
Yes, which we have no idea what he's going to bring to the table. That was with Dorian Thompson Robinson. So, yeah, 38 is really low.
You want more?
Yeah, I would go more just off like default, right? Like especially if the game script is gonna go how we think it's gonna go and he's gonna be down.
Yeah, I mean the weather might be crazy, but at the same time, if you're down on the scoreboard, you're gonna throw a lot anyways. You know, like so. I'm not trying to. We're going with what you want. Okay, so we got our Browns player.
Yeah, that doesn't have to be like chunk play, 38 yards.
Right.
That could be 3 catches.
Yep. Okay. So. Our next options are, it's all based on yardage. It keeps like automatically taking it off, which is really weird. Prize Picks, you're losing your mind here. Okay. We've got Brandon Ayuk at 44.5 receiving yards. Brock Purdy at 203.5 passing yards. Deebo Samuel at 39.5 receiving yards. And George Kittle at 34.5 receiving yards. So we'll do at least 2 of these. You tell me. Which player you want to go with? Ayuk, Purdy, Samuel, or Kittle?
So, and I'm sure we'll get to this. One of the biggest differences between what the Browns bring to the table defensively and what the Cowboys do is the Cleveland's secondary is very athletic. Did not get that same vibe with what the Cowboys bring to the table. And I think you can just kind of see when Deebo caught that deep third down that you were talking about, like his speed, like he's running away from dudes. Ayuk is running away from people. Not sure it's going to be like to that effect with Cleveland. So Cleveland is very good at taking away the top wide receiver on the team. So I'm going to cut Ayuk out. Cleveland is very good at taking away the number two wide receiver. So I'm going to take Deebo out.
Okay.
Cleveland ranks 26 in DVOA in defending tight ends. George Kittle's prop is 34.5 receiving yards.
Yeah.
Let's go over that.
All right, we're going more. So we've taken George Kittle's 34.5 receiving yards, and we're going more. I like that, especially after that last game.
Yeah, right? Like, why stop there?
Right.
That was really cool, by the way. What'd you think about the Fuck Dallas shirt?
I think it's awesome. I mean, I think Kyle Shanahan had a perfectly good answer for it. Like, he called it, like, WWE shit, and that's
entertainment. That's what we're doing here. Yeah.
It's entertainment.
I know Cowboys fans probably felt some type of way, but I guarantee, and I know Parsons had something to say, but like by Thursday, by today, they're not thinking about that, man. Like, we got to win this next game because because somebody wore a Fuck Dallas shirt. Like, no, they're not. They're over it.
If a Fuck You Dallas shirt is what it took to make it personal, then you were going to lose no matter what.
Yeah, you never stood a chance.
Yeah, a shirt shouldn't get at this level. Like, a shirt does nothing. Like, it could have said your mom's name and phone number on it. Now that's a little far, but it's like you're already going hard. Either you're going hard or you're not. Like, you're an NFL player. Like, I guess when you think about like the greatest competitive athlete of all time and Michael Jordan, he used to do that shit. Like, he would make stuff up. So it's like, I guess everybody needs their motivation, but I don't think it's a shirt that just says F you. Like, what?
Right. That's
damn. Okay.
That's light. That's come on.
Right. All right. So we need one more. Do you not? So you want to avoid the receivers? Do you want to go with Brock Purdy's passing yards?
Okay. So that's going to be tough. Think about the situation the Browns defense is in. So backup quarterback, they know they have to do everything or else they slip up. Their margin for error just isn't there. Offense probably isn't going to carry the load. If you look at, so Brock Purdy's passing yards, 203.5, right?
Yep, 203.5.
This year, 220 against the Steelers, 206 against the Rams, 310 against the Giants, 283 against the Cardinals, and 252 against the Cowboys. So literally every time has been over that number, but I think there's going to be some weather in Cleveland. I think the wind is going to be north.
Yeah, wind and rain, maybe.
So, yep, even some slight precipitation. And, like, this is a very good defense, a very sound defense. So it would make sense just to run the ball, get out of there, right? Let's, like, if we have to go Purdy, and I know this is going against all the numbers that we just talked about.
We can go Ayuk and Deebo. You know, we can go any of them more or less, you know, so.
What are we at for, okay, let's do that. So let's think about it. I would.
Ayuk's at 44.5.
Jeez, that is obnoxiously low. Ayuk is like one of the best receivers in the NFL right now. I know, but at the same time,
I've been banging that drum for years.
Right. So he is kind of, and this doesn't sound, I mean, he is kind of all or nothing in the sense that he's going for 129, 148, or the other two games, 43-58. So which Ayuk are you getting? Are you getting the explosive big play Ayuk where Brock's just feeding him the ball? Or is this one of those where he just catches a couple in breakers and like that's his game?
Right.
But when has Deebo, outside of the game Ayuk missed, really gone off as a receiver? So he had 55, 63, 129 when Ayuk was gone, and then did have the goose egg, but he was hurt, so we can't count that. And then 55 last week, which really, he had 55, but 42 came on one play. 40 right. came on one play in the Giants game. 23 came on one play. Like, he's an explosive wide receiver. That's what he does. So basically, that's what you're betting against. Like, will Deebo have a chunk play? Will Deebo take one a long ways? But it's 39 is really low, too. Like, I don't know. I might lean over just because screen, right?
You want on Deebo?
Whew. He just went over last game. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if I'm going to take an over in a game like this, it feels like a Deebo game, you know, where right. you need somebody
quick hitters.
Brandon Ayuk's, he'll kill you on the 10 to 30 yard range, whereas Debo can take a 2 yard pass to the house. So
we might not have that opportunity with the way the weather is.
Right. So you want to go? You want to go over with Debo?
Yep. Let's go over and let's call it.
Okay. Going. I'm keeping it a power play. I'm not doing, because you can do a power play or you can do a flex play where you only have to hit two of three, but it like seriously hampers your take from
percentage.
It. Yeah. So, all right, I'm going to go. We're going power play with, we're taking the more on Amari Cooper at 38.5 receiving yards. We're taking more with George Kittle at 34.5 receiving yards. And we're taking the more on Debo Samuel with 39.5 receiving yards. I'm hitting the button. We're not going back. Okay, so the KP version of my Prize Picks entry, and all y'all know that like if I lose, I can't like blame it on him. I've been losing myself. So, but if you don't know what we're doing right now, this is called Prize Picks. It's one of our newest sponsors here at Striking Gold. It's daily fantasy sports, super easy, super exciting, very very simple to get engaged with. You pick 2 to 6 players, more or less, as you can hear from us talking about it. And then you watch the winnings roll in. What I like best about Prize Picks is it's just so simple. You literally go on the website, you type in what team you want to make a pick for, and there's all the players from that team, and you can go what direction you want to go. If you want it to, it can take less than a minute. And they really do mean that. It really is that fast. If you want to jump on board, go to prizepicks.com/gold. And use the promo code GOLD for a first deposit match of up to $100. Again, that's prizepicks.com/gold. Use the code GOLD and anything up to $100 for your first deposit, they're going to match. So you put in $100, you've now got $200 on Prize Picks. It's daily fantasy sports made easy. And again, it doesn't get much easier than this. I would highly recommend checking it out. prizepicks.com/gold. Okay. So it's in there. It's in there. It's locked in. The entry is locked in. All right, man. So, I mean, what?
Have you ever won?
Yeah. I've won a couple.
Nice.
Yeah, man. What the hell?
Yeah, I don't know. The way you were sounding like you.
Well, okay. Blanks. So past entries. Let me count my total number of entries. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I've won 2 out of 7. So not exactly a super great record here. One of them, we would have been 3 out of 7. One of them, I bet that Christian McCaffrey would have less than 17.5 rushing attempts, and he had 18.
Of course he did.
I know. And the last carry went for like 2 yards. And I was like, why?
Did we
why you do
that?
This?
Yeah.
So, but I've got some greens in there. We're all right. We're going to turn it around. We're going to bounce back. All right, man. So let's talk the matchup. Let's talk Browns. Man, we're 40 minutes in. We haven't even got. I guess we've kind of talked about the Browns a little bit, but where your head? What's your head at?
So this is, we talked to like weather matters in the NFL, right? We talked about how the wind is going to be probably upwards over 20 miles an hour.
You want me to give you the forecast?
Please. Let's hear it. Okay. We know there's going to be a backup quarterback. We know that. The Browns are a very, very good defense. Whether you're looking at DVOA, whether you're looking at EPA per play, whether you're looking at success rate, whether you're looking at any total defense, essentially any metric you can bring up defensively, the Browns are probably going to be top three, and they might mess around and be top two, top one in a lot of ones that I see anyway. So with that in mind, probably going to be a lower scoring game. Browns are, like just I said earlier, the margin for error defensively, like they know. Hey, if we mess up, those guys on the other side of the ball aren't going to be able to do anything. So we have to be perfect. I am interested to see how aggressive Steve Wilkes is against a rookie quarterback because they have a certain style, and that style usually means, hey, we're going to win with our front four, and that's that. And then on the other side of the ball, like we are, this is as good as it gets. This is like best on best. Jim Schwartz, defensive coordinator. Kyle Shanahan, offensive coordinator, Jim Schwartz. By the way, this Browns defense was miserable last year, like bottom five. And it's just the complete opposite because he came in and did the complete opposite. Who knew? They move Myles Garrett around a lot. So the 49ers offensive line, they're going to be on their, they're going to have to be on their P's and Q's, or else somebody's going to get matched up with Myles Garrett, and that is not the one-on-one matchup you want. So I think that's going to be the big difference between Schwartz and Dan Quinn, is where we see Micah Parsons. Like, sure, he moved around a little bit, but not to the level that they will with Garrett. Brock's going to have to continue to take care of the ball. I think that's another thing when you're just talking about quarterback. People are kind of waiting for it to happen, right? Like, they're thinking, all right, he's going to turn, this is the game. He's going to, you know, turn into a pumpkin. And it just hasn't happened. If it doesn't happen against the number one defense in the NFL, it's probably not going to happen. So sorry to burst your bubble. But the Browns defense, as I mentioned, like, they are athletic, they are fast, and they can contest the routes that the 49ers run. So I want to see how aggressive they are. I want to see it. If there's finally a defensive line that's able to consistently get after the 49ers, like, Dallas really didn't get into Brock's face much. Like, there are a couple plays here and there, but again, like, they got rid of it so quickly that it didn't matter. But I think the Browns might be able to offer a little bit more, especially because I think they're just better pass rushing along the interior. I don't know what, like, a prediction type of thing would be, just because of how big of an impact the weather will play.
Okay. So we mentioned the weather. Here's the official weather.com forecast for Sunday. And I'm really they have a day and night forecast. I'm only reading the day forecast for obvious reasons. So cloudy in the morning, then off and on rain showers during the afternoon, high around 55 degrees, winds north at 15 to 25 miles an hour, and the chance of rain is 40%. And you were saying something before we hit record that like something over 18 miles an hour is like the trigger for bad quarterback play or something?
Yeah, just like offense just suppresses, like just doesn't happen once the wind gets over 18 miles an hour. And I forgot what the exact number was, or just how you don't score points when the wind is that high effectively. So we'll see.
Yeah. One thing I want to, and this is again, just kind of surface level stats, but you were talking about the Browns defense and you were talking about them being in like the top three of a lot of categories and them possibly being in the top two and not two. So this is just the super basic stats, you know, that do lend a little bit of a story. So, Cleveland Browns defense is first in on completion percentages. The 49ers are 15th. They are second in yards per attempt in the air. The 49ers are third. They are first in passing yards allowed. The 49ers are 13th. They are second in passing touchdowns allowed. The 49ers are 12th. They are first in first down percentage allowed. The 49ers are second. They are first in rushing yards allowed. The 49ers are third. They are... I didn't put down the yards per carry. I think they're first in the NFL in yards per carry on the ground. And they are also first in rushing first downs allowed. The 49ers are 25th.
So they're not giving up anything.
No, they're very good. And I always include the 49ers rankings as a barometer, because what we know from the 49ers defense is that they're very good. And those stats don't paint all the story. You go back and you look at like the quarterbacks they were facing or the situations they were facing. They faced the Bengals in week one that we saw was just an offense in absolute shambles. Joe Burrow was now, they could have been in shambles because they were going against the Browns defense, but Burrow was 14 of 31, which is 45% for 82 yards, which is just not the Joe Burrow we know.
So that he was, like, really hampered that game. I forgot what his
name was. He was hurt, right?
Yeah, like, he was just a shell of himself.
So we got, and then we got Kenny Pickett the next week, who we obviously know is, which they lost that game. He was only 15 of 30 for 50%, one touchdown and an interception. Then you've got the Titans the next week, which is Ryan Tannehill. He was 13 of 25 for 104 total yards, you know, and then you've got the first time they absolutely got worked as a defense was by Lamar Jackson, who he was 15 of 19, which is almost 80% for two touchdowns and no interceptions. And then he also had nine carries for 27 yards. So that was the
right,
first
and
time
they had
the Browns
some,
defense.
And that's where Thompson Robinson, like the backup quarterback, put him into some tough spots. So that right. wasn't really on the Browns.
He had three interceptions.
Yeah. Like I, I feel like one of those went to the house. He definitely threw three interceptions. He threw for 121 yards on 36 attempts, man. 3.4 yards per attempt.
Ugh.
Yes. Yes. 25.
Yuck. I was listening to Guy Haberman and John Middlecoff, and they had a little nugget. I can't remember where they got it, but apparently Kyle Shanahan is 1 of 8 against Schwartz.
I have heard that. So I've just heard that he struggled. I didn't see the exact number, but that Schwartz just owns Shanahan or has his number. So if you think he doesn't, Kyle doesn't know that.
Right.
That's probably the bulletin board material to get him, right? So that is interesting, though. And I think it also just speaks to how effective Schwartz is in general.
Well, and another important thing to talk about is the injury report. You know, the Browns have a very heavy injury report. Obviously, the highlight is Deshaun Watson is still out with a right shoulder. He has been ruled out, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
They also have guard Joel Bitonio. He did not practice on Thursday with a knee. I don't know if he's expected to play. Tight end David Njoku burnt his face off.
Did you see that picture?
Apparently. I did not. Should I look it up?
You should go to David Njoku images or media. Yes.
David Njoku face.
I mean, you being the Halloween guy, you'll probably like this.
Yeah, he ain't going to mess with me at all. Damn.
Yep.
He looks like he's... He almost looks like he's turning white.
It looks like a mask.
Yeah, it does. It looks like
costume.
It looks like he's some racist dude wearing blackface. Like it's because his skin is peeling off. Wow. Yeah,
in the most literal sense.
Yeah.
So you said Joel Bitonio, that's their left guard. Right. If he missed Wednesday's practice, he missed Thursday's practice. If he can't go, that means a rookie sixth rounder will start. They're all already starting a rookie right tackle. So that would be just huge. And not to mention like third string quarterback.
Right. So there's weaknesses there. You know, in terms of mismatches, I would probably say the Browns offense against the 49ers defense is a much more significant mismatch than the 49ers offense against the Browns defense. Because if you're talking about just their general standing in the rankings, the 49ers probably have the same statistics as an offense on the offense side of things. You know, a lot of their statistics are going to be in the top five. So in those two, that's like, you know, your old J.R. Slobberknocker, whereas the biggest mismatch of the game is the Browns offense against the 49ers defense. So
yeah, like, you know, the 49ers have to be as stingy as possible here. Like, this can't be a game where they, I mean, again, you look at what they've given up, it hasn't been much as it is, but like it's a rookie fifth rounder. Can't give up much, if anything, to him. You have to get a turnover. You basically do what the Browns did, or sorry, do what the Ravens did. Force him into some hectic decisions, force him into some bad decisions. If the Ravens got 3 turnovers against him, you should at least be able to generate.
Well, I think they're starting PJ Walker instead of Dorian Thompson Robinson.
So PJ Walker, kind of a journeyman, I guess.
He was on the Panthers last year, right?
He was. And he actually, I mean, he got in there at the end, so he didn't really play against them, but he started plenty of games. Yeah, I know he had one game against the Falcons that was pretty good, but other than that, he's just kind of middling, and that's who he's a backup for a reason. And that's like, this game isn't for like everybody, right? Like, not everybody's going to be a Patrick Mahomes. Not everybody's going to be a superstar. So like, there's a reason he is just called up from the practice squad, and they have to really limit this offense. No Nick Chubb, which is huge. So it's going to, and that's why you go back to like Amari Cooper or bust, right?
Yeah, Jerome Ford will be their guy, who, from what I've seen, is doing okay. That doesn't make him Nick Chubb, but...
Right. Not going to find many replacements for Nick Chubb.
No, that was a tough one to watch. I didn't appreciate that one. And, you know, you're not... I don't have anything invested in Nick Chubb, but watching a player that talented go down in a way where you like know in that moment that it's kind of all over. That's always rough to do. That's always a rough watch. So, you know, you got a 49ers defense that we know just took a solid Dallas Cowboys offense and made them look absolutely pedestrian. I don't think the Cleveland offense will have anything additional to offer in terms of anything more that would threaten the 49ers, anything more than the Dallas did, you know? So I think that's your mismatch. The 49ers, like you said, they need to be stingy. They can't give up any. What they can't do is, and this obviously falls onto the offense too, is you can't go into halftime with a score of like 10-7 or 7-7, or, you know, it really, in my eyes, falls more on the offense than anything. They're the ones that are going to have to at least make sure that they outpace whatever the Cleveland Browns are able to put together on offense. So that's the interesting, obviously the highlight matchup, the main card, the main event is the 49ers offense against the Browns defense coming at you with Myles Garrett, who already has 5.5 sacks on the season. He has 5 tackles for loss. I looked it up on that. I had him up here on that other website you gave me. Yeah. Okay. 5.5 sacks, 13 quarterback hurries, 13 quarterback hits, 9 quarterback knockdowns, and 25 quarterback pressures.
Which, silly.
If you want something to gauge that off of, he's playing better than Nick Bosa right now. Now I'm not.
Oh, he is 100%. Like if you're looking at this from like an objective perspective, you can acknowledge that Nick Bosa is a superstar, and he's against Dallas. I know he might not have had like the gaudy pressure sack numbers or whatever, but he looked like a player who had his legs underneath him. Myles Garrett has been doing what Bosa did against Dallas every week. Like he actually, I forgot what game it was, but he for sure got robbed of defense player of the week one week. He is an insane player.
And I feel like maybe you can't now, the 49ers and Kyle Shanahan cannot do the same things they did against me. Hold on, let me pause. Micah Parsons. Not Mika. I said Mika like 10 Mika times less.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I have a Mika in my class. And I've had a Mika in the past. And I know a Mika. I've heard of a Mika. I also know like one Mika. So it just overpowered me. I wasn't able to hold on. And I mispronounced it many times. So what they did against Mika is not going to necessarily work against Myles Garrett. Myles Garrett is a completely different animal in the same way that Nick Bosa is a different animal than Micah Parsons. So, you know, he outweighs Parsons by like 40 or 50 pounds, you know, like it's not the same, but do you feel like what they did against Parsons is in any way a kind of a run through for what they're going to have to do against Garrett?
That's a good question. So obviously you don't want to say it's like a quote unquote practice session because it's not, but like that, those are easily two of the five best pass rushers in the NFL. So in a sense, yes, because he is that guy who can move all over the field. He's an uber athlete. He like the way that he moves is a lot of the same ways that Garrett moves. Like they can do things that other humans can't. And because of that, yes, it's a better way to like a preseason game effectively for Myles Garrett. But there's no way to prepare for Myles Garrett until you actually play Myles Garrett. And I think offenses find that out. And I think the 40, like, I don't want to say like they're going to find out he's going to have 17 sacks, but I just think he's plays for a better coach. He plays under a better scheme. He plays with better players, plays more athletes. And I would imagine the Browns are far more prepared for what the 49ers are going to bring to the table, or at least going to do in the
way. And they're coming off
undoubtedly help. And yes, that is a great point. We have not even gotten to the fact that like Jim Schwartz was able to watch the 49ers live. He's able to prepare for them with a whole week. Like that matters in the NFL.
Right. Yeah. You're going up against one of the NFL's best defenses that has had a week to prepare for you. But if you want to look at it on the bright side, I mean, it's another, if this 49ers offense can somehow find a way to make the Browns defense look look mediocre or not look look anything but elite. Let's just say that. If the 49ers offense can somehow manage to get 24, you know, against the Browns defense and they win this game like 24-10, 24-9, something like that, then I would think that's a job well done, because everything that Browns defense does, they make difficult. And I think you made a good point against the you know, you're looking at the Baltimore game, you're like, well, the Ravens won 28-3. Well, if you look at their possessions that I haven't actually looked at, you know, they, one of their touchdowns claim where they got the ball on Cleveland's 10 yard line.
Yeah, like, come on.
Right. And another one of their touchdowns came when they got the ball on Cleveland's 38 yard line. You know, and the other two were standard drives against a solid defense. But in a way, if you're talking about an offense, an opposing offense, setting the Browns defense up for failure, I don't necessarily think the 49ers are going to be doing the same thing. You know, I don't expect that. I think the 49ers offense is going to be moving the ball quite a bit more efficiently. If anything, there might be some of the inverse, you know, like the Browns offense could continue to set the defense up for failure, and the 49ers might score more points than you think they'd normally be capable of because of what's going on offense. And, you know, if you want a good, maybe this game looks like how the Ravens games look, because that offense is still going to be struggling. Maybe the 49ers do manage to keep that 30 plus point streak going because of the fact that the defense is forcing takeaways. But, you know, and there's one thing I was going to say too, is do you think that the fact that Nick Bosa is on this team has given the 49ers a weekly practice run?
So think about it. They see Bosa every day in practice all throughout training camp. So 100%, how could it not? So you get Bosa all season. They've had TJ Watt. They've had Aaron Donald. They've had fresh off Micah Parsons. So I just named four probably of the best pass rushers in the NFL. And now you get the fifth one, lucky you. So without a question. But again, he's still like, offenses find out the hard way that you don't find out about Myles Garrett until he's actually on the field with you. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle him. It'll be interesting to see who holds up. Trent Williams versus Myles Garrett. Like, we're talking about two of the most gifted players possibly. So it'll be a fun matchup to watch. Prediction time. Let's do it. Let's talk who wins, by how much. We mentioned the weather, and remember that's going to play a factor into these score predictions. It's going to be ugly. Do the 49ers score 30 points?
You know what's funny, too, before I get into this, is you mentioned Trent Williams and Myles Garrett, and I've always made a joke on here about how, like, you know what, like, a battle royale is, right? Like Warzone, you know, like, where you have to be the last one surviving. Well, I always picture, like, them dedicating one NFL stadium to one giant hand-to-hand combat battle royale between all the NFL players. And I've always said that if they did that, I feel like Trent Williams would win. He would be the last guy alive. Like, if you've seen him, if you watch him play, if you understand what
Who's
he looks
going
like
to beat him.
Right. So, but I feel like if I just thought, as you said that, I was like, would it come down to Myles Garrett versus Trent Williams? Man. You know, like, would those be the last two alive, you know, hunching over, covered in blood, just, you know, whatever. I'm getting way out of my mind on this, but Myles Garrett is that type of human being. Just not normal. So predictions, I don't think they hit 30 again. I just, with the weather, could they hit 30?
Oh my
30?
God, you hate the 49ers.
I do. I have no faith in them. I think, like, if it really is going to be raining, rain neutralizes a lot of things, you know, and it doesn't necessarily close the talent gap, but it makes it a lot slimmer than it normally would be. So,
like, there are going to be passes that are dropped that are first downs every other week. There's going to be a carry for Christian McCaffrey where he probably slips. Like, that's just the nature of playing in the weather.
Right. And so I'm assuming the 49ers still get the better of the Browns. I think they're still the better team, especially when you consider the Browns offense going against a 49ers defense that could set the 49ers offense up with some short fields. I'm expecting that. But again, you know, you're neutralizing a lot of speed. One of the 49ers' biggest attributes on offense and defense is speed, and the rain's going to make that interesting. I think the 49ers win, but I'm going to go, I think their 30 point streak ends. I'm going to go 24-9. I don't necessarily think the Browns get into the end zone, maybe get within field goal range a few times. I'll give them that.
A little bit, sounds like, yeah.
Right. What do you think?
I'm going even uglier, even more lower scoring. So 20-6. I think, as you said, the streak ends at 30, or the 30 point streak ends. And that doesn't mean they played poorly at all. Like,
no,
think about this, man. Like, will the 49ers score 30 points for the sixth game in a row? Like, what?
I know.
That's not how football works. Like, they are a juggernaut. They're an official wagon. But again, the weather, the circumstance, like, there's really no reason for them to run it up. Like, there was plenty of reason last week. They're at home, prime time, under the lights. And now, backup quarterback, let's just get in here, move the ball, just get out here healthy. That is probably going to be the mindset, especially with, as I said, a quarterback who has not thrown a pass this season. So 20-6, I think the 49ers do move the ball, but I think they're forced to settle for field goals more often than we're used to seeing them. Browns probably have a drive. Let's just call it late in the second half, like they always, like defense offenses always do. So they'll probably get a field goal there, and they'll probably get a garbage time field goal. But if we're talking about a team winning comfortably, if we're talking about a team not giving up a touchdown, it's another quality outing, man. So 20-6 is where I'll end it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And again, if the 49ers manage to do more than that, if it wouldn't shock me if they still got over 30, you know, if the weather stays mild and they just get normal conditions to do their thing, it wouldn't surprise me at all if the 49ers manage to hit 30, 31, 32, whatever mathematics allows. But if they don't, you know, if they get a comfortable lead, then they've done enough, you know, against a defense that's that good. That knows that they have no, like you said, margin for error. So I think that the 49ers, if they hung anything close to the mid-20s, high-20s, then they've definitely done what they needed to do. All right, so before we get out of here, tell the world, hashtag Striking Gold fam, the everybody out there listening to this podcast, where to find you.
Yeah, so tweet once a day. Max?
Max.
KP underscore show. I think we talked about it a little bit. Just X. It's just not exciting. It's not what it was.
Yeah, our boy Evan Sowards like recently posted like yesterday that he was like gonna take a break or go away, and I honestly was like kind of jealous. I was like, man,
right.
I don't wanna do that.
How dare you without us? NinersNation.com. You know, any newsy stuff, we got you covered. Opinion pieces, injuries, whatever you're looking for. And then YouTube. So Tyber and Kyle Posey.
Yeah, YouTube. I forgot to mention the fucking YouTube. Kyle Shanahan put together YouTube videos like Kyle Shanahan.
I wish. After every game, gonna break down, you know, what happened, what we saw. Try to go into a little bit of depth, whether, you know, for the Cowboys example, how the offense was able to get so open, how they were able to drop 42. And then I need to do a better job of this. Finally dropped a video on the defense, about the defense. Just
a 30-minute video on the defense.
So long overdue, right? They are a good unit. So as much as we've talked about the Browns defense,
you don't say.
Yeah, there are a lot of good players on that side of the ball. So they're good. Yeah, check it out. Try to get in depth, as I said. I try to offer a point of, you know, what other people might not be able to see, or maybe what you missed on a play. The ins and outs of football. So I enjoy it. I ramble. I talk a lot on it. But yeah, I'm going to watch it anyway, so why not record and share it with other people? So I have fun doing it. But that's where I'm at.
I think that the users here would enjoy your YouTube content. I think it's good. think anytime somebody can just spend some serious time breaking down plays, showing why they work and how they work and all that stuff, it's definitely worth it. So again, Kyle Posey on, I just searched Kyle Posey 49ers on YouTube, and the very first thing that came up was his videos and his channel. So check it out. They are very worth it. They make me smarter, so they will also make you smarter, or maybe you're much smarter than me and they're not going to make you smarter, but still support our boy. Again, in case anybody's confused, Kyle's name is on still on the Striking Gold cover image for a reason. He was supposed to be the co-host of this podcast. He's been relegated to occasionally visiting status because the company, the organization that he works for, said that he wasn't allowed to have success for anyone but them. So I took that personally, just like MJ.
Dion.
And right. And I left it on there. And if any of you are wondering why that name is there, yet KP's not consistently on the show, that's why. But it's still probably more of my fault that he isn't on more consistently. I just don't really want to bug him with it without him getting paid for his services. So we'll see what we can do about that. But as always, bro, it's always a pleasure talking ball with you. Thanks for jumping on, and we'll do it soon. I promise.
Anytime, brother, man.
Maybe a bi-week thing or something, or maybe soon.
There we go.
So, well, all right, everybody. That is the end of the episode. If you are still here, then you've already offered the ultimate form of support in sticking with this podcast for over an hour. If you want to go a little bit further, jump on, leave us a 5-star review on whatever app you listen to the podcast. Download, subscribe, listen to the advertisements. Remember, not just for my podcast, but any podcast you ever listen to the advertisements. Don't skip forward. Don't press the forward 30-second button, because many of the ads that from sponsorships are there, you're only paid for a complete listen. So if there are podcasts out there that you want to support, and I'm surely not just talking about mine, listen to the advertisement. But anyways, I appreciate you guys. Thank you for the support. Before another episode, I'm Rob. That's KP. This is Striking Gold, and we are signing out.